You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
The Canadian Environmental Assessment Act has been in place since 1995. It provides more public participation and a more rigorous review than provincial assessment legislation. In many cases, it covers projects not subject to provincial assessment at all. The Act includes a requirement for Parliament to review it by June 2010. That review took place last October, and the report has not yet been published. But Stephen Harper and two key ministers, Peter Kent and Joe Oliver, have criticized the Environmental Assessment Act. To find out more about what the Act does and doesn't do, and what these attacks mean for its future effectiveness, we've contacted Jamie Neen. Jamie Neen is Communications and Outreach Coordinator at Mining Watch Canada. He's also on the Steering Committee of the Environmental Planning and Assessment Caucus. Jamie Neen joins me today from Ottawa. Hello, Jamie.
Good morning.
What does the Environmental Assessment Act actually do?
Well, it basically does two things. One is it catches all kinds of projects and initiatives and gives a mechanism for doing an environmental review that might not be done otherwise. And the other is that it allows the public to see what's going on. And even to participate in, especially in larger projects.
The Act was established in 1995. What has it been able to accomplish since its inception?
Well, I think it's been able to allow the public and First Nations in particular to participate in a lot of reviews of large projects. It's brought the notion of environmental sustainability as part of the way we plan and execute large projects really into the mainstream, because that's one of the objectives of the Act. And I would say it's also failed in some respects to actually make those decisions as solid as they need to be. You know, it has allowed bad projects to go ahead. It's allowed things to go ahead that probably shouldn't have, and it has not imposed the kinds of restrictions, especially to make sure that the mitigation measures and the, you know, the monitoring that's supposed to go on actually happens. So it does have its weaknesses.
Can you give me some examples of a bad project that was allowed to proceed in spite of its limitations?
Well, there's one that we actually went to court over, which is the Red Chris mine in northern BC on Tahltan territory. And, you know, the Tahltan Central Council had opposed it. And what happened, the reason we went to court was because the Department of Fisheries and the federal government had split the project into different components so that they wouldn't have a large mining project that they had to allow public participation on. And eventually the Supreme Court ruled that was a manipulation, that was an illegal manipulation of the law to divide projects into little bits so that you wouldn't have to do a proper assessment. But at the same time, the court said, you know, it wasn't the company's fault that the government did this, and therefore the half-baked assessment that was done and allowed the project to proceed still stands, and the project is actually still going ahead.
You mentioned the mitigation. What are the shortcomings of the mitigation process now?
Well, the problem is that there's no strong link between the environmental assessment process and the regulations and monitoring and mitigation that take place on any major project. So, for instance, you know, an environmental assessment could go through a review panel, and the review panel could make recommendations that say, you know, there's a bunch of measures that need to be taken to minimize the environmental damage caused by the project. And those recommendations may or may not ever be fulfilled. They may or may not get into the actual licenses and permits for the project, for instance. They may be ignored by the regulators, or they may be ignored by the minister when he or she makes the final decision. And then they may not be implemented fully, even if they are brought in. And so, you know, even on something as large as the Mackenzie Valley gas pipeline project, you know, the federal government accepted a lot of the recommendations of the review panel, but they gave no indication of how they were actually going to implement them.
So what it sounds like you're saying is that their authority is a little bit too weak right now.
Yeah, and it's a mixed blessing because it means that the process itself is less formal, less legalized, less judicial than, say, the National Energy Board process. It means that people can go in and present, you know, whatever information they have and whatever perspective they have by video or with a, you know, literally a song and dance if they want. And, you know, sometimes those are actually very powerful expressions, but they're not, you know, and they're accepted under the CEAA process, but they wouldn't be under a stronger and more legal process. But at the same time, we've got this difficulty where, you know, these recommendations don't have the force of law behind them, and they're only recommendations, and they have to be signed off by a minister, and as I say, they don't always make it into reality.
I understand the Act is restricted to assessing the environmental impact of physical projects, but not government policies or programs. What does that leave out of the picture?
Well, it leaves out the broader range of policy decisions around things like fisheries, and so, you know, we've there are some obvious examples like the eastern cod fishery where government policy was made to allow the, you know, in the face of all the scientific evidence and all of the input from the fishers themselves, the policy was to basically push the fishery as far as it could until it collapsed. And there was no environmental process around that. There is a guideline. There's a cabinet guideline that ministers or departments can follow when they're developing policy, but it's secret. You know, we have no idea what they're doing or even if they're using that procedure, so it's very weak. That would be a wonderful thing to open the policy making process up, and that's part of the battle, really, is that, you know, governments like to make these decisions in private so they don't have to actually account to the public for the process and the criteria that they're using, so they may, and I think this government is probably carrying that further than any previous government because they're making sure that the scientific evidence isn't even there.
And I mentioned in the introduction that a review was due in the summer of 2010 of the Environmental Assessment Act, but it didn't happen until fall last year. What was the review like?
It was pretty cursory. You know, it was a bit of a joke actually, because, you know, it was referred to the committee. This is a standing committee of the House of Commons. It was referred to the committee in June of 2010 as it had to be, but the committee had a full agenda and they didn't really get around to it. But they didn't do any homework either, and, you know, so we had another election and finally it's on the committee's agenda, and they spent about 2 days finding out how the legislation actually works. So they, you know, they had the federal officials in just explaining what the different terms meant and, you know, the mechanics of how it works. And then they launched right into hearing how people thought it worked, and they heard some industry witnesses and they heard some environmental groups, and then they heard from the Assembly of First Nations very briefly, and then they said, okay, we've heard enough, they gave us 2 days to make any final written submissions, and then they gave the Library of Parliament researchers a week to write a report, and the committee has been debating the report ever since. We don't know what they're doing because it's all on camera.
Any deadline for a decision?
No, not really. The committee can take as long as it needs to develop its report. If the opposition disagrees with the official majority report, they can issue a minority report. And then the government, if the committee asks the government to respond, then the government has to respond. But in the meantime, the government can go ahead and do whatever it wants. It doesn't have to wait for the committee at the same time.
Environment Minister Peter Kent and Natural Resources Minister Joe Oliver have joined Stephen Harper in criticizing the Act. What don't they like about it?
Well, I think they don't like two things. One is that it can take a long time. It can take literally years to thoroughly assess the impacts of a major project. And, you know, for them, I don't know what they would like to see. I know that the new procedures under the Environmental Assessment Act give a 12-month maximum and for comprehensive studies, and panels can still take longer, and the Northern Gateway Pipeline panel has given itself 2 years to do its hearings. They don't like that, and I think they don't appreciate the public input, and they don't appreciate the scientific input, and I think we've seen that on, you know, any number of fronts where this government has moved to keep its own scientists from testifying, and to really eliminate a lot of the programs that would produce scientific data that would go into these reviews that would actually allow for a more informed decision making.
And given these objections, how would they like to see the act change, or how would they like to change it?
What we've heard is that Joe Oliver, as Minister of Natural Resources, is taking responsibility for this, and that he's going to be actually introducing legislative changes within the next couple of weeks. We don't know what that is, because we don't, you know, they haven't told us any details, whether that's going specifically to the National Energy Board Act and or the Canadian Environmental Assessment Act, or both, whether it's imposing time restrictions on any public process, or whether it's, you know, actually going into the mechanics of those different, like the NEB and the SIA processes. We have no idea what that will do, but they've made it clear that they want to spend less time discussing this, and they want more certainty in the decisions. And I think, given that 99-point-something% of projects are already approved without major modifications, then I don't know how much more certainty they can ask for. The existing process does turn down the odd, really bad project, but it's a rare occurrence.
What would this mean, a weakening of the Assessment Act for projects like the Northern Gateway, or the pipeline, the various pipelines that are being planned?
Well, it means that all of the work that we've done over the last couple of decades to build up a system where public input is used and decisions are made better by involving experts and public input, that's not working anymore. You know, it wasn't. It was working okay. It needed improvement, but it was working to some extent, and now it's being just dismantled piece by piece. What it means is that people who are concerned about these issues at the larger level, in terms of climate change, in terms of regional watershed level environmental impacts or social impacts for that matter, as well as the communities that are directly affected, are going to have to find other ways to make their voices heard. And whether they go to court or whether they go to blockades, I don't know. It really depends on the situation. But what it means is that the public decision-making system is not going to take them into consideration anymore.
Well, in terms of this legislation, what should people do if they want to protect it?
We've been asking people to talk to their own MPs. I mean, you know, by all means, write Stephen Harper and Joe Oliver. We don't have a lot of illusions that they're going to change their mind about this. We know where they get their direction from. But a lot of members of Parliament don't know what's going on, and they need to understand how significant this is. So, I mean, ultimately, even if it's a Conservative member of Parliament, if there's enough voices inside caucus, that's one thing that might change the Prime Minister's tune. But the important thing really is the education process, so people understand what this is and understand that it's not just an arcane technological or technocratic kind of process that you get involved in if one of these projects is coming through your backyard. It's something that actually is going to affect all of us, and, you know, sooner rather than later.
Well, Jamie, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
Oh, thanks for the opportunity.
I've been speaking with Jamie Neen. He is a communications and outreach coordinator at Mining Watch Canada. If you would like to make your voice heard, there is a list of people to write to with their addresses there. You can find it at miningwatch.ca, or there's a direct link from our site, redeye@coopradio.org.